you live here, I guess. It's your day to play. Hundreds of Egyptians injured. Various reports are saying up to 25 dead now. We're going to get to that tonight. This hour of the Molloy program, that's what you're tuned to. This hour of the Molloy program is sponsored by John in Kansas, who says, come on, I know there are still a few truth seekers left in Kansas. Thank you, John. A lot of serious stuff tonight, a lot of strange things happening. But right in the middle of it, the top of the next hour, we're going to pause for one segment and talk with Tom Johnston of the Doobie Brothers, if you don't mind. We're going to talk a little bit about their new CD, World Gone Crazy. All right? And at the bottom of the hour, podcast trivia tonight, thanks to a continuing supply of podcast gift subscriptions that are provided by benefactors to the program. We appreciate it. How are you feeling tonight? You feeling kind of low-key? It's very interesting when when a major disruption in the fabric that overlays this planet occurs, like what is happening in Northern Africa for the past week or so. When a major rift, rip, tear occurs, when all of a sudden the capitalists, the corporatists, the dictatorships, the Americans, the Israelis, the Egyptians, whoever it is, can no longer keep the cap on things, can keep the kitchen matches hidden, and people find the kitchen matches and start striking and lighting fires. Everything just kind of subdues for me. It's like, okay, I need to watch this. I need to understand what is going on. And I need to see how people, after, in this particular case, after 30 years of absolute dictatorship, with a few little releases of air to take the pressure off, an absolute dictatorship for 30 years, how finally people react when they have finally had enough. And like most revolution, which is what this is, it is coming from the middle class. It is coming from the college students and the professors and the union members. Yeah, oh yeah, they're union members in Egypt. From the school teachers, the physicians. And in that kind of subdued state of mind, I try to wonder what I'm watching. I've been watching Al Jazeera English or English.AlJazeera.net. For the better part of today, their live feed, the live video feed, right now it's coming from Cairo. And as I watch this, I'm trying to understand what it is I'm seeing. Obviously, I'm seeing people who have had enough. But I want to understand, as I watch, the implications of this for, first, the people of Egypt. Secondly, Northern Africa. Third, the Middle East. And fourth on my little list, the United States. We have very seriously backed Egypt, Mubarak, the entire time he's been in power. Before him, Anwar Sadat. Shortly after Sadat signed the peace agreement with Menachem Begin and Jimmy Carter, that he was assassinated. Remember that video? Who was it? Was it the military? Was it Muslim Brotherhood? Was it the CIA? Who was it? It was a day when Sadat was reviewing troops going by, I believe, and all of a sudden The grandstand was attacked by people with Kalashnikovs or AK-47s or whatever they were. It was a long time ago, 32 years ago. Often wondered who was behind that. I believe the Egyptian government said it was the Muslim Brotherhood that did that. I wonder. I always had a suspicion it was somehow a CIA-inspired plot. But as I watch Al Jazeera today and pay attention to what's been going on in North Africa over the past week or two, I want to make sure that I see it correctly, but I don't necessarily, although this is difficult, see it through the eyes of an American, but see it through the eyes of, and this is almost impossible, but, you know, I try it anyway, through the eyes of people who live in that region, see it as the pressure cooker that just didn't relieve enough pressure until finally it exploded. And I came across something today that somebody sent to me, I think. I don't think I found this on my own. This was December 16th, 2008, a little over 2 years ago. Zbigniew Brzezinski, former U.S. National Security Advisor to Carter and co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, member of the Board of Trustees for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And in a longer article in the New York Times, he said this, I pulled this out of it, "For the first time in human history, almost all of humanity is politically activated, politically conscious, and politically interactive. The resulting global political activism is generating a surge in the quest for personal dignity, cultural respect, and economic opportunity in a world painfully scarred by memories of centuries-long alien colonial or imperial domination. The worldwide yearning for human dignity is the central challenge inherent in the phenomenon of global political awakening. That awakening is socially massive and politically radicalizing. The nearly universal access to radio, television, and increasingly the internet is creating a community of shared perceptions and envy that can be galvanized and channeled by demagogic, political, or religious passions. These energies transcend sovereign borders and pose a challenge both to existing states as well as to the existing global hierarchy, on top of which America still perches. The youth of the Third World are particularly restless and resentful. The demographic revolution they embody is thus a political time bomb as well. Their potential revolutionary spearhead is likely to emerge from among the scores of millions of students concentrated in the often intellectually dubious, quote, tertiary level, end quote, educational institutions of developing countries. Depending on the definition of the tertiary educational level, there are currently worldwide between 80 and 130 million college students, typically originating from the socially insecure lower middle class and inflamed by a sense of social outrage. These millions of students are revolutionaries in waiting, already semi-mobilized in large congregations connected by the internet and pre-positioned for a replay on a larger scale of what transpired years earlier in Mexico City or in Tiananmen Square. Their physical energy and emotional frustration is just waiting to be triggered by a cause or a faith or a hatred. The major world powers, new and old, also face a novel reality. While the lethality of their military might is greater than ever, their capacity to impose control over the politically awakened masses of the world is at a historic low. To put it bluntly, in earlier times, it was easier to control 1 million people than to physically kill 1 million people. Today, it is infinitely easier to kill 1 million people than to control 1 million people.
You may be low, you may be down, no place to go. But when the Lord gets ready, you gotta move. You gotta move. You gotta move. gotta move, child.
Past the hour. That's pretty powerful stuff written by an old globalist like Zbigniew Brzezinski. He's had, I think, a bit of a change in attitude since he was Jimmy Carter's foreign minister. And more or less engineered the resistance to the Soviets in Afghanistan. Remember that? That's why we're there now. All these years later. Tom Johnston coming up, top of the next hour. I'm going to talk with a Doobie brother, if you don't mind. Jesus. But the first line here that Zbig had in this article 2 years ago, for the first time in human history, almost all of humanity is politically activated, politically conscious, and politically interactive. It's those last couple of words there, politically interactive, that causes me to pay very close attention to what's going on in Egypt. And I understand that in Jordan there has been a series of actions against the government, well, against the prime minister, actually, in Jordan, apparently. You know, Jordan is a constitutional monarchy, I think. Isn't the Queen of Jordan an American woman? I think she is. Damn it, where is that? I can't keep track of anything here. Oh, well. Yemen, I have a letter here that has gone out to... it says to community-based organizations and human rights bodies, newspapers, agencies and media outlets, diplomatic missions and legislative councils... And it's from we, the people of the South Yemen, under occupation of military and brutal regime of North Yemen. And it goes on to explain the situation that is developing in Yemen. In Jordan, the problem seems to be The fact that prices have gone so high. Where is it? Thousands protest in Jordan. Here it is. And again, you can get this at Al Jazeera, english.aljazeera.net. And it's about the only place you're going to get coverage that is not filtered through American corporatism. Just the first line here. Thousands of people in Jordan have taken to the streets in protest, demanding the country's prime minister step down and the government curb rising prices, inflation, and unemployment. In the third consecutive Friday of protests, Jordan's main Islamist opposition group, trade unions, and leftist organizations gathered in the capital, waving banners reading, "Send the corrupt guys to court." The crowd denounced Samir Rifai, the prime minister, and his unpopular policies. I haven't heard anything about that on American media, but that's certainly no surprise. But to pay attention to this, there is... dramatic change afoot on the planet. This happens, of course, independent of anything that goes on in the United States or independent of anything that goes on in China, independent of anything that goes on in the European Union. By the same token, when you have birth and death on the scale that's the political birth and death that's occurring right now, the birth and death of hegemony ours dying, China's being born. When you have that sort of chaos, political chaos, just below the surface, most of us in this country don't pay a whole lot of attention to it because we are so focused on the things that affect us on a day-to-day basis. I mean, really, does anyone stop somebody on the street and say, do you care what's going on in Jordan? Hell no. Do you care what's going on in the occupied territories? Hell no. Do you care what's going on in China? Well, yeah, kind of. But when you have a huge, massive, century and a half long empire like the United States dying in its death throes. I'm not saying we're going to disappear. The UK didn't, England, the British, they didn't disappear. The French, they didn't disappear. The Russians, they didn't disappear. But when you have an empire like ours dying and the rise of an empire that eventually will dwarf ours, China, there is upheaval. There is a sense in the air of the kind of change that is like nothing we've seen, not in our generation. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Before he can see the sky. Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend.
Up to the flying monkey right. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by John in Kansas. His message, come on, I know there are still a few truth seekers left in Kansas. Wonder what he means by that. A couple of emails here regarding what's going on. From J.J. Jingleheimer Schmidt. I used to sing that song. Hey, Mike, this is a day that will give all truth seekers a great reason to hold on to the hopey, changey feeling that the U.S. citizens had when Obama came into office, though the hope for Obama being the vehicle for this change is gone. One must see this unstoppable change happening at a full gallop in many countries across the globe. Look at Iceland, Tunisia, Greece, all standing up against their governments and their rulers at the World Bank, the IMF, and the lesser-known Bank of International Settlements. They are now joined by the Egyptian people who are fighting against the status quo in a way that us in North America still only dream we could. I bet there is an abundance of soiled shorts in Washington, along with all the global institutions that have had the shackles of debt on the wage slaves for far too long. The people seem to get the fraud that has been perpetrated by these thieving bastards that rule, quote, them. Ruled no more are a growing number of countries whose citizens are putting their governments in their place, which is behind the people. So in honor of the ones in Egypt getting injured and fighting to the death against the power structure that have held them back, let's all stand tall and walk like an Egyptian and know that one day soon it will be our turn. All right. J.J. Jingleheimer Schmidt. And from Roz in Canada. Mike, what do you think of Joe Biden saying that, in his opinion, Mubarak was not a dictator? Well, Roz, what do you think I would think, right? Same thing you thought. Anyway, Roz goes on, last time I looked, he wasn't a king, yet someday, some say he was grooming his son for president when he goes. Mubarak, not Biden. Democracy doesn't have dynastic succession. I heard that Mubarak's health is not good. As for Obama and Biden, they don't seem to realize that the Egyptian people want Mubarak out. And they're not too happy about the countries that supply Egypt with weapons either. I wonder if the Israelis are setting up barriers at Gaza's border with Egypt yet. Lots of questions. This doesn't bode well for the U.S. or Israel. That is, if the coup is successful. Roz. Watching and listening to the American government regarding this issue, I think it's more upsetting to me than anything I've heard them say in a long time. By the American government, I mean, of course, the press secretary and Obama and Biden. Oh, and Hillary Clinton. I just about gouged my own eyeballs out when they had Hillary on this afternoon making some kind of a statement. CNN had it on about expecting the government and the people to calm down, admonishing the dictator Mubarak not to use violence. This from a U.S. Secretary of State that decided, whose government decided not to punish people that sent our captives to Mubarak for torture, and now our Secretary of State is saying things like the Mubarak government has got to refrain from violence and the demonstrators have to refrain from violence. Are you out of your goddamn mind, Hillary? What do you think is going on over there? Come on, Mrs. Clinton, you're the Secretary of State. What do you think is happening in Alexandria and Cairo tonight? What do you think happened in Tunis? What do you think is going on in the streets of Amman? What do you think will be happening soon in Riyadh? To see Hillary Clinton standing there telling the Egyptian dictator to refrain from violence, I just about peed my pants. And telling the Egyptian people to chill, just cool it a little bit here, come on. And then the President of the United States also saying the same thing. A regime that we have backed for 30 years and said to them, do any goddamn thing you want. Just keep a lid on it. Torture? It's your country, pal. Suppression? Oppression? I wonder what we're seeing the past couple of weeks. Yeah, I remember reading Robert Ardrey's book a long time ago, African Genesis, about the origins of the human species. And as I past couple of weeks watching this, another African Genesis. I remember one time I was still taking calls from right wingers. This is back in the day when I still thought, well, you know, I'll give them a chance. And I had a woman call in and just raise hell with me because I kept referring to Egypt as being an African country. Do you remember that, Gabby? she just couldn't have, that's not African! Okay. But to see the spokespeople for the U.S. government making some of the inane, half-witted statements that they're making, the most lucid statement was the one, and I'm not debating what Zbigniew Brzezinski's motivation was when he made the statement, a lengthy article in the New York Times 2 years ago, part of which I quoted for you before the last break. I'm not saying if he was delivering that as a warning to the so-called first world countries to tighten the screw even more on the so-called emerging economies, or if he was simply stating simple, observable fact that the pressure applied by colonialism, imperialism, And their hideous successors, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and all these other capitalist-run organizations that care not a damn about life or death or disease or struggles or a village someplace with no running water or someplace else just eaten up with a guinea worm disease because there's nobody on the whole goddamn planet that will contribute maybe $50 million to eradicate guinea worm. It just goes on and on. Well, Carter finally did. It just goes on and on, doesn't it? It never stops. It never stops. Well, it's stopping. It is. There is something occurring that is unstoppable in a different sense. When I say it never stops, I'm talking about the crushing insistence on the money manipulators and the global banks and the capitalists and these thieving parasitic sons of bitches who have been doing this for how long? How far back you want to go, Mike? I think a lot of people realized to their horror that the internet and the new technology could be used as a device for organization unlike anything ever. I can remember being a student at NC State University in 1970, cranking out on a mimeograph machine. I still have that stink in my nose of mimeograph machine ink, turning the crank, running out handbills, smearing them all over the place. The new mobilization committee against the war in Vietnam. Oh my God, that was a lifetime ago. Well, it was. It was 40 years ago. Jesus God. The internet, Twitter, isn't that a cute name? Tweet, tweet, Facebook, Facebook. Cell phone technology. For the students at Tiananmen Square that were murdered by their own government, it was fax machines. Remember that? Fax machines. Doesn't that seem so Model T-ish, so last century? So here we are. Here we are. Pay attention, if anything, and try to pay attention without the filter of American media. I don't care who it is, the Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Broadcast Network or CNN or MSNBC. No, go to Al Jazeera. Go to English.AlJazeera.net and listen to the commentators who are there. Listen to what is being said. Watch the video. That makes sense to me because I want to know what's going on from a political point of view. I think I understand what's going on from a human nature point of view. I really do. I think the end is at hand. That's probably a very, very good thing.
The war between the rich and the poor, war between the man and the woman. There is a war between the left and right.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
In the air, from those nags, Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of
about 9 before the hour. This hour has been brought to you by John in Kansas, whose message is, come on, I know there are still a few truth seekers left in Kansas. Thank you, John. Prairie 2 weighs in. Subject line is, your tail fat. Fat tail, he writes, is an insider market term that comes originally from mathematical modeling. It refers to an anomalous event that skews the data and produces a funny-looking chart. In the market, it's one of those very real possibilities that are completely ignored until they happen, like the complete breakdown of multiple governments in places that have oil and such. Tunisia wasn't a big deal in the scheme of the world, and it's probably not what is really driving the popular revolt in Egypt and other countries in the Middle East. What all these countries have in common is grinding poverty among more than half the population, who live on less than $2 a day. This translates into not being able to afford food when the price doubles or triples. So-called developing countries are scrambling to secure basic foodstuffs and are announcing new programs to distribute food and cooking oil in order to avoid being the next domino to fall. The so-called developed world is not exempt from the fat tail. The New York Stock Exchange dropped hard today and commodities ripped sharply. Oil in the European markets is already closing in on $100 a barrel. That's $12 above West Texas crude today. Gold jumped $25 an ounce as investors are anticipating a surge to safe investments. This will all translate into higher food and fuel prices that were already being pressured by market speculators. And really, that's all that is going on here is speculation and market manipulation by unscrupulous Wall Street parasites. They sucked $3 trillion out of the pension funds during the last crisis, and they're back for more. People will die, governments will fall, and millions will suffer to transfer more of the world's wealth to a handful of useless capitalists in the name of, quote, free markets, end quote. In case you haven't guessed, there's nothing free about the markets. They cost us dearly. If you happen to live on $2 a day in a third world country and food costs $3, you could die. If you're a 99er in the United States and are living on food stamps and nothing else, then you're not much better off here as the price of food surges. If the Republicans are successful in cutting off all government spending and end food stamps, well, you get the idea. But the real danger is that they will manage to cripple the economy to the point where it simply collapses and food stamps aren't even available. I'm not kidding about the canned goods. PrairieNumeral2.com. Well, that certainly is uplifting. but I've discovered that over the long haul, Prairie 2 is usually right. I've got a... Oh, and by the way, a couple of folks, Roz in Canada and Michael in Roswell, mentioned that the BBC... apparently, I left the impression, because I didn't know any better, that the BBC was funded strictly by money allocated by the government, which is not the case. There are fees that are paid by citizens. However, the government does control how that money is spent. I had something here from I've lost that too. Jesus. About that very topic, the BBC had its government subsidy cut, I think, by 16%, and is closing bureau after bureau around the planet. And I still maintain that this is part of the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast network's plan to incapacitate or butcher or decapitate the BBC so that the Murdoch terrorist broadcast global enterprise can step in and fill the vacuum that'll be created because the BBC the most listened to, I believe, broadcast in the English language, and not just English. I mean, they translate into several different languages. These translation bureaus are several that are going down because of the lack of funding. And the British are not suffering the same kind of crisis, financial crisis, as we are in this country. But that's being used as one of the excuses for the defunding. Canned goods, huh? He's been saying that for a long time. Pray too. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, we're going to chat during the first segment. I've got to have a break, so we're going to talk with one of the Doobie Brothers. The new album they have out, World Gone Crazy, I mean, the title itself is enough to make you want to buy it, which I did, and it's just turning out to be my favorite Doobie Brothers album over, like, what, 40 years? Oh, my God. Anyway, we're going to talk with Tom Johnston when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. If you're listening online or in the MikeMalloy.com chat room, you heard the last song right before we went to the theme song, My Baby, written by TJ Tom Johnston, who joins us now from somewhere near San Francisco. Hey, Tom.
Actually, I think, Mike, you picked up the wrong line.
I did. Oh, this is Sanchez. Let me put you back on hold. Here's Tom. Hey, Tom.
Good evening.
I thought your voice sounded a little bit strange. Welcome to the program. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
I love that song. I've told just about anybody who will listen that the whole CD, the whole album, World Gone Crazy, is great. But I am so hung up on My Baby that I just can't. It's hypnotic. I can't get away from that song. I love it.
Well, good. Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoy it.
Why this particular title? Before you answer, I got a copy of your CD and I started playing it a couple of weeks ago, and I hadn't heard anything from the Doobie Brothers in a long time. I know some of you have gone different directions, let's say, and that you toured differently away from each other during the 80s and part of the 90s. But this CD just has really caught me, so I started playing it. And one of the people that handles publicity for you, Bob Divney, apparently listens to the program out on the West Coast, and he heard us playing it and said, you know, if you'd like to talk to TJ, we can set it up. Why a title, World Gone Crazy?
Basically, just because I watched the news. How's that?
Yeah, that's good. That's different from The Captain and Me or Toulouse Street, you know.
Well, it is.
The world.
And I'm at a different stage in life than I was at that point in time also. And I pay a little more attention to those sorts of things, I suppose. But actually, that song started out, like most songs for me anyway, with the rhythm track.
Mm-hmm.
Built its way up, and then the last thing I ever do is lyrics, always.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started writing them, which was probably about 2006, I want to say, 2007, I was writing, the song was supposed to be about New Orleans anyway in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there with the words, and having been to New Orleans many times and having looked around and seen what's going on with a lot of folks down there, I just basically scripted it with from this guy's point of view, who's working in the streets and trying to make enough money to keep from having to live in the streets.
Right.
He grew up poor, and he's willing to work, and it's just a matter of finding, you know, enough employment to do so. And then, of course, there's a mention in there of the government taking your stuff away, and that's a reference to, I suppose, taxation and things like that, as well as any other number of
yeah. Where do you start?
Where you start? That's a good question. I have to be honest with you. When I sit down to write a song, I generally don't know what I'm going to write, and especially with words. But for that was one of the songs that I've written in my life, and there's not a ton of these, that writes itself. When that happens, it's a really magical moment, and it's extremely satisfying, because a lot of times I can usually get through the track, and I can usually get the feel going and everything, and it's just great. Now I got to write the words.
And then, right.
Like pulling teeth.
Well, the lyrics and the music on that particular cut just fit together so perfectly. And I noticed in some of the liner notes that you wrote, you said the
word. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you referring to My Baby?
Yeah, I'm talking about My Baby.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about World Gone Crazy.
No. The whole CD, but World Gone Crazy, too. I mean, what you were saying about World Gone Crazy, absolutely.
Yeah, I was answering about the wrong song. I'm sorry.
No. Every single song on here, as far as My Baby is concerned, that's
easier.
It's so much easier.
That's an easier question to answer.
How did
My
you...
Baby is just a feel-good song. That's literally
right.
What it is. I think it's
exactly.
Something that it's like a... Something I call country blues is kind of what I call that kind of stuff. And it also just wrote itself. It just kind of flowed out. Whereas, as I said, some tunes don't. But that thing, I just sat down and kind of wrote it in the night.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a feel-good tune. It's not. There's not a great deal of depth in the lyrics. And there's certainly nothing about a guy working in the streets.
Right. Well, that's the thing about My Baby. It's with all the crap that is going on, with all the stress and all the madness that's out there. When I first heard that one, I thought, well, I can just sit and listen to this. I don't have to think.
Exactly what it's about. It's so good, too.
Just listen and enjoy it. I Know We Won with Willie Nelson. How did that come about?
Pat wrote that with Willie. They both live in Maui, and Pat has, I guess, known Willie for about 12, 13 years, something along those lines. And they hang out together on occasion, and they've been talking about writing a song, I think, for quite some time. And I guess they probably just said, Pat finally took the initiative and said, would you mind coming up with some words and maybe melody ideas or something for this tune? I'm not really sure about the exact writing process because, number one, I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, I've only heard it secondhand. But basically, it's because they're friends. And Willie said, sure, I'd love to do it. And so he came in to the studio in Maui and cut his vocal. And I think he wrote some of the words as well.
I have a lot of friends in the South, and have for a long time, who are musicians. And over the course of the 40 years that I've lived in the Atlanta area, I've often been curious how songwriters, especially singer-songwriters, how the change in the times affects you. When you go back to listen to the music and a song like that, and then you come up to... World Gone Crazy or Far From Home. How do the political times affect the way you write, or does it affect at all?
I'll be honest with you. I'm sure it does. I'm not what you'd call an activist writer.
Uh-huh.
I just write whatever comes in my head. When I go up there, sometimes it'll just be a drum pattern, and then whatever it comes out of that, and and moves off into something else, be it a guitar part. And I, and this album is the first time that I've written, well, at least in a heck of a long time, anything on keyboards. And I wrote two or three songs on keyboards for this album, and one of them was World Gone Crazy, and another one was Brighter Day. And but as far as the words, I'd say the closest thing that would be politically motivated would be probably World Gone Crazy. The last album we did had one that was even more succinct in that area. The last time we did Being Sibling Rivalry, and the song was called People Gotta Love Again. And it alludes to the violence in the streets, which seems to be escalating. And that does upset me because I have kids and stuff, although they, you know, they're growing now, but not so growing that I don't think about these sort of things. And I wrote specifically about that, and I wrote specifically about the clash between the various religious factions in this country and basically worldwide. And it was, Allah was mentioned for Muslims, you know. Jesus was mentioned for Christians. Something in reference to Buddhism and things like that. And basically, I wrote that in, I want to say, 99, the actual words. So the album came out in 2000, and as we all know, 9/11 happened right after that, and it was kind of almost prophetic without meaning to be.
Yeah, I hear you. That's got to be a little bit scary, too. Tom, I hope you come somewhere in the South when you tour. I guess you guys are going to tour for this CD. I hope you come near the South.
Yeah, well, actually, we tour every year without fail. This past year, we did, I believe, about 110 dates, which is more than we normally do, but we covered the United States three times. Also played Europe, Japan, Canada. We're going to be going to Australia in March. We're going to go back to Japan in October. But yes, we were down in Atlanta, as a matter of fact. We were down there, I want to say it was Chicago.
Well, the next time you come back, we're going to get some tickets and come and hear you. Tom, thanks a lot for talking with us, all right?
I'd love to have you come on down.
All right, sir. Take care. Tom Johnson, yes. Doobie Brothers, thank you very much. The album is World Gone Crazy. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. After the next break, podcast trivia, where you can win a free one-year subscription to commercial-free podcast downloads. So, 877-996-2556 if you want to do podcast trivia. Sanchez, who I thought was TJ. Hi, Sanchez.
I couldn't even sing close to that, so I'm not even going to try.
Okay.
From the land of the Midnight Taco Wagons, I wish you a very good evening.
The Midnight Taco Wagons.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite hangouts, man. All-night taco wagons. You can't beat them. All up in Bellwether Boulevard.
No, here in Atlanta, we used to have Midnight Fried Rice Wagons.
Wow.
That were really great. This is a long time ago. You could go get, you know, fried rice with pork or fried rice with beef or chicken at 4 a.m. on little these little carts on the street, Peachtree Street in downtown Atlanta. Long gone. Must be about the same thing, right, Sanchez?
Yeah, it's a spot when you're coming home from a hard day of a hot night clubbing, you know?
You got that right.
Yeah, man. I don't even know where to start with this thing with Egypt. But first of all, before I do anything else, I want to send a shout-out, especially to all the people working at Al Jazeera in English, including my homeboy, Frank Gonzalez, who's bureau chief down in Mexico City. But these people do a fabulous job. I've been watching them since, like, last night.
They really do. Al Jazeera is English, Al Jazeera.net.
Yes.
For anyone who wants to get report of what's going on there, that's the place to go.
Yeah, exactly. I the American media, I don't even watch them. I don't even have a TV connected to my outlet anymore. It's just, you know, I get all of my information from alternative sources. And ever since the Gaza war, where we found out all of the ugly things that were going on, I've been watching them. So, yeah, shout out to them. Man, this thing with Hosni Mubarak changing the government, you know, his announcement to the world that, yeah, he was going to throw everybody out of his government out.
Yeah.
You know, that reminds me of?
What?
That reminds me of like Saddam Hussein or Kim Jong-il changing their underwear. big deal, man. I mean, until, the people in Egypt all over the nation are not out in the streets marching to have government changed. They want the man on top. This is a bottom-up solution that they're going for here. So I have a feeling that this little uprising is not over with at this point. It's going to keep going on and on, man.
Yeah, it is, and it's not going to stop in Egypt. Like I said earlier in the program, Sanchez, I think what's going on here is, what's the phrase they love to use in media?
Domino effect?
A sea change.
Ah.
That people who have been, first of all, hideously oppressed during the end of empire, whether it was British or French or Ottoman, and then it just switched. It went from that oppression to the oppression that was put on them by their own leadership, and their own leadership was sponsored by the same imperialist powers, with the exception of Turkey. They kind of fell by the wayside, but the United States, Britain, France, Germany, the pressure was on. And finally, I think after 80 years of this crap, or 90 years, almost a century, I think the people have a generational distaste now, an absolute feeling of we're not going to let it go any further. We are not animals. We are not just here to prop up our oil-rich dictators and these bastards from the West. And the time has come. I just have a feeling that the time is here. I hope that in countries that have a entrenched civil service like Egypt, that the religious crazy people won't take over.
That's the consideration,
right,
here, man, because the Suez Canal and all these other interests, which is the reason why that the United States has propped up this dictator for 30 years. It's been another 30-year conspiracy. People talk about 30-year conspiracies. Well, here's another one. We've been propping up this guy for 30 years. He's been making profit promises back and forth. But now, because of what's been happening in Tunisia and Yemen and possibly other places, they're starting to see the realization that this is a unified effort that's going on there in Egypt right now, Mike. Some of the commentators are calling it a rainbow coalition. It's not just the religious wackadoodles. Mm-hmm. It's the workers. It's the teachers. It's the poor. It's the middle class, as you correctly stated. Mm-hmm. They're all out in the street. The students, everyone marching in the streets at this point.
Well, it's going to be interesting, and I say that in the same way that the Chinese said, may you live in interesting times. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Sanchez, thanks. I got a boogie. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. Podcast trivia when we come back, so stick around.
Slide. Slide in your direction.
time once again for podcast trivia on the Malloy program, where the right answer will get you a one-year subscription to commercial-free podcast downloads of this program.
Woo!
Retail value of $59.60. Who's first in the winner's circle here? Jan is at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. Hello, John.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good.
All right. Are you ready to do this?
Sure.
Okay, John. Here we go. The resistance to the regime of Egyptian dictator Hosni Mubarak is being led by which of the following groups? A, school teachers. B, union members. C, Muslim and Christian clergy. D, university students. E, the Egyptian middle class. F, the urban poor. G, all of the above.
I would say G, all the above.
Well, if you would, then you win. You got it. Thank you, John. John. Now, what are you going to do with a free one-year subscription to this program?
I don't know, man. This is the first time I've ever listened to your program.
I called about
Sarah Palin.
You're what? I'm sorry I didn't. Wait a second. I think we better do that again because I think John used the F-bomb again. And I think that's a no-no. I think he was listening on XM, and I think he thought that it was just XM. That was a little dodgy anyway, that call. All right. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll redo it at the bottom of the next hour. Eddie's in Cleveland, Texas, listening on XM. Eddie, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
Good to you. I've listened to you for years. You were talking earlier about the BBC.
Yeah.
It's funded through the British people through a license fee through televisions. They pay a license fee on the television, hence
mm-hmm.
no commercials, right?
Right.
That's how it's funded. And the BBC World Service have cut transmissions, the English transmission, to some countries in Eastern Europe,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately. And they've laid off, or they will be laid off over the next 2 years, a quarter of their staff, which is about 600. But the bigger problem is the bloke that's running the government, a tenuous hold, I know, because of the Liberal Democrats. Cameron is a Thatcherite.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know that Margaret Thatcher was big buddies with Reagan.
Right. Well, Cameron's grip, I understand, is starting to get a little bit shaky now because the coalition with the Liberal Party is starting to fall apart.
Well, you know, you probably get more news from there than I do. I'm a truck driver. I try and get as much news from up there as I can, and you probably are more in tune with what's going on there than I am. But I have great faith in my countrymen that the honeymoon will be over and they'll oust him as soon as possible.
I guess you're a British citizen. What brings you to the United States?
my wife's an American.
I see.
Meaning to insult you or anybody that's listening, because I know I'll be told to go home. I've been told that already several times in trucks when asked my opinion.
Why would people tell you to go home? What is your opinion that gets Americans to tell you to go home?
Well, I've told them that they're low information.
That's true.
They totally lack curiosity.
That's true. That's true.
That America is the world, and I told one lad one day that if you want to be the leader of the free world, at least know where it is.
You know?
So, I live here because my wife's an American, and
right.
Her parents are elderly, and obviously we have to be here for them.
Mine.
My parents have passed away, but they lived in a country with a national service anyway, so they were.
I would imagine, Eddie, that most of the things that you say that irritates the people you're coming in contact with is probably very, very true. Not everybody in this country is a right winger or a so-called conservative. You know, a lot of folks would probably listen to your point of view and agree with you. So I'll tell you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
I have a friend also. I actually trained him when I was I used to train drivers, and he's from Detroit, who listens to you, who we're really into.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a truck driver, and there's this stereotypical thing about truck drivers is that we're unwashed and we don't, you know, we don't listen to anything, and nothing against country music, I like country music, but we're a more diverse bunch than that, I think, and there's a lot of them out here that do have a bit of a better word, but we're a little bit more diverse than that.
Yeah, we've in the time that I've been on radio, Eddie, I've had an awful lot of listeners who were truck drivers, and there is the stereotypical idea of a truck driver, but from having been in this business for a long time and taken a lot of calls from people who drive truck for a living, especially the long distance drivers, over the road drivers, there's as much diversity in that profession, I think, as anything else. Eddie, I hope you call again. Your cell phone is breaking up on us horribly, so I'm going to have to let you go now, but I do hope you'll call again, and thanks a lot for checking in. I appreciate it. Okay, bottom of next hour, we'll do podcast trivia again. Boy, I don't know. All right, Raw Story has something out that just went up on their website about an hour and a half ago. U.S. secretly backed Egyptian protest leaders. Here's what it says. For the last 3 years, the U.S. government secretly provided aid to the leaders behind this week's social uprising in Egypt, aimed to topple the government of President Hosni Mubarak, according to a leaked diplomatic cable. One of the young Egyptian leaders who attended a summit for activists in New York with the help of the U.S. Embassy in Cairo was detained when he returned to Egypt, the memo released by WikiLeaks said. The Daily Telegraph reported today that it and the Secrets outlet were both hiding the identity of this young Egyptian leader. He was arrested in connection with this week's demonstrations. The leaked document indicates that the U.S. government was publicly supporting Mubarak's government while privately backing opposition groups. A plan concocted by the dissident groups to oust Mubarak and install a democratic government prior to the September 2011 elections was relayed to the American embassy in Cairo. Margaret Scobie, the U.S. ambassador in Cairo, said in a memo to the U.S. Secretary of State in Washington that she questioned the likelihood that such an action would happen. Other cables revealed, however, that U.S. diplomats had sought out the opposition groups, one of whose members attended a youth summit in Washington, organized by the State Department. This week's protests in Egypt were instigated by a group of young, educated Egyptians known as the April 6 Youth Movement, which has a presence on the social network site Facebook. The Egyptian government has blacked out the internet and other telecommunications in a move to quell the protest organization, etc., etc. Well, what do you think? I question that. I really do. What would be the objective? I mean, Mubarak has been a good puppet for the United States ever since Sadat was assassinated. Mubarak does what he's told to do as much as... he and probably most of the Egyptian population do not see Israel as someone they like to have a peace treaty with. Mubarak has one. He has provided us with the torture chambers that our government during the Bush-Cheney crime organization years, and apparently even now, he provided those torture chambers to for our use when we sent detainees there. So why would they want to get rid of him? That's a good question. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, the technology part of MSNBC, I think it's MSNBC, has an interesting point here. Egypt's government has got to return the internet access to the country by Monday or suffer massive economic damage as banks and other economic institutions return to work without the ability to conduct commerce. Hadn't thought of that. The writer here says it's currently the weekend in Egypt, which means the government's decision to block all internet traffic in response to the protests may seem to many of the nation's 84 million inhabitants as more of an inconvenience than cataclysm. But international policy analyst for Human Rights First told MSNBC, quote, if you go beyond the weekend, real damage is done to capital flow and banking. He adds, that's probably why most governments don't do this. It hurts the state and it hurts the economy. End quote. Not only, it's reported here, would it impact government holdings, but it's sure to hit those investors, businesses, and middle-class citizens who may support Mubarak. This guy cites Iran's 2009 presidential elections as the counterexample. After protests ensued there and spread onto the internet, connections got slow, and the Iranian government monitored traffic carefully, but they never turned it off. That's one of the interesting aspects of a wired world, right? If you turn it off to block protests, you're also cutting your own economic jugular. Which is, I would imagine, one of the reasons that net neutrality is such a threat right now. Net neutrality meaning simply anyone can get on the internet without a gatekeeper, without a two-tiered system. The net is the net. And if you've been paying attention, I'm sure you have, the effort is out there to end net neutrality, to make it a two- or three-tiered system. And I think it's obvious why. I don't think it has anything to do with generating internet income. I think it has everything to do with quelling, eviscerating protest or the use of the net as an organizing tool against this repressive regimes, whether they're in the Middle East or any place else. including the United States, if we ever wake up. But interesting idea, don't you think, that net neutrality is something that capitalism can't stand, but not for the obvious reason, the less than obvious reason, because it is too democratic, it's too anarchic, it's too counter to the stranglehold that capitalism, gangster capitalism, has to maintain over everything. Without that stranglehold, eventually people say, you know, I've had enough of this. I've had enough of this. Because capitalism ultimately destroys everything in its path. It may seem to you like, hey, listen, what the hell is this communist on this 25-cent radio program talking about? Capitalism is good. Capitalism is what helped my mom and dad put me wherever they put me, you know, through trade school or, I don't know, university. Maybe. I guess in the early stages, it's just like any con scam, any con game, any Ponzi scheme. In the early stages, everybody's happy as pigs in swill. But eventually, and I think our eventually is here, where capitalism finally reveals itself for what it is. It's just a monstrous, predatory, devouring beast that is never satisfied, not until it's eaten everything and eaten all the other eaters. Everything has to go into the maw of capitalism before it's satisfied, and even then it's not. So, yeah, the internet? Oh, my God. I used to listen to those stories when I was a kid, when I was a teenager and a young adult. Capitalism is wonderful. That's why we are the most powerful country on earth. And blah, 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 blah. And then around the edges were the professors that used to say, it's self-limiting. And eventually, it's like the snake swallowing its own tail. Only the problem with that is, as it swallows its own tail, it will destroy everything. There's no way it won't, because capitalism is insatiable. Come on, you know this. Jesus, I'm not giving lectures in economic theory. You know this to be true. It is insatiable. It will not stop until it has everything. Everything squared. Everything cubed. It wants everything. And the last thing it wants is an organizational tool like the internet. Hence, let's end net neutrality. End it, end it, end it, quickly, 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 before the proles figure out how powerful a tool it really is. Eh? You got that right. All right, we're going to take a break. If you're on hold, we'll come back and take your call. And at the bottom of this hour, we will try once again for podcast trivia. And for those of you who are concerned about the F-bomb, nah, it didn't make it over the air. If you're listening on the internet, you heard it, but that's as far as it went. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. Now, this is kind of interesting. Tim from L.A. Sends me this. It's from the blog site Act, numeral 2, act2.freepress.net. And here's what it says. In Egypt this week, the Mubarak regime shut down internet and cell phone communications before launching a violent crackdown against political protesters. Now, Free Press has discovered that an American company, Boeing-owned Narus, N-A-R-U-S, of Sunnyvale, California, has sold Egypt DPI equipment. That stands for Deep Packet Inspection equipment that can be used to help the regime track, target, and crush political dissent over the internet and mobile phones. The power to control the internet and the resulting harm to democracy are so disturbing that the threshold for using DPI must be very high. That's why before DPI becomes more widely used around the world and at home, the U.S. government must establish clear and legitimate criteria for preventing the use of such surveillance and control technology. And Free Press is calling for Congress to investigate the use and sale of DPI technology by American companies. Good luck with that, Free Press. You can go to their website and sign their petition, Act numeral 2, act2.freepress.net. Tim writes, imagine that. Boeing dictating government policy in a foreign country. Imagine if the same happened here. Oh, you mean a foreign... A foreign capitalist organization dictating... Well, it probably does happen here. It certainly happens here with American corporations. But I'll be damned. I never heard of that. I'm not surprised. Boeing, this is what we were talking about before the break. A capitalist organization, a gangster capitalist organization, and especially one like Boeing that is, another huge weapons manufacturer, obviously, in addition to other stuff, but they they manufacture murder equipment, death equipment. And now they've sold Egypt deep packet inspection, DPI equipment that could be used to help the regime track, target, and crush political dissent over the internet. Why? Sure. No surprise there. Why are you acting surprised, Mike? Come on. Guardian, the UK, reports that the protests that began against the regime of Mubarak have spread in the last few days to encompass almost the entire country. It now includes not only the stone-throwing youths who huddled in the fog of tear gas below the underpass near the center of Cairo, or charged police on the Nile bridges, but Egyptians from all walks of life, old and young, the middle classes and the urban poor, those who didn't take to the streets, waved from their balconies or threw water bottles and onions to the crowd below to be used against tear gas. Others handed out paper face masks for the same purpose. Among the thousands of protesters were doctors in white coats, students, professors, those working for NGOs, housewives and children, hotel staff and shopkeepers. What is extraordinary is how this mass movement has all of a sudden united Egypt against a single figure, Mubarak, forging an unexpected alliance of members of the Muslim Brotherhood with those more moderate, as well as union members, activists, and those whose policies or politics are only defined by wanting something else. The presence of so many women in the demonstrations had initially helped moderate the violence. Groups of women chanted, "Peaceful, peaceful," and seized rocks and stones from the hands of the young men who were about to throw them. To your phone calls here. Tim is in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. Hey, I got a couple questions for you.
Sure.
I'm curious why the Muslim Brotherhood isn't on the terror watch list. I've heard some rumors. I mean, they're connected to, I hate to say it, but National Socialism a long time ago, and that's one point I wanted to make. And then the fact that the death squad man from Honduras to Iraq, now here, Negroponte is back again. He's raising, and I'm sorry if you've already brought this up.
No, I didn't. We did bring it up. What's Negroponte doing now?
Oh, yeah. Negroponte's got his fingers in this spot.
Oh, does he?
Yes. And I heard that earlier tonight, and I was at my work party tonight, so I've missed a good chunk of your show, but look into it. Negroponte's got his hands, and whenever Negroponte shows up, the death squad are behind.
Yeah, that's true. He is one of the truly evil human beings that this our country has puked up for the rest of the world to deal with. Kissinger is another one. But tell me a little bit more. See, I don't know that much about the Muslim Brotherhood, and I should. I know it's been a...
It's incredible. If you connect the dots, I mean, we're talking Prescott Bush, the Bush family, National Socialism, the end of the Hitler regime. I mean, it's a bizarre soup, and I don't know as much as I should. And I want to do some more research on it, but it's bizarre. But they are not on the terror watch list, and it's just like...
Is that because maybe, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's because they are limited to operating within Egypt, if that's the case? I don't know. I'm going to have to do, that's one of the players in this that I am just draw complete blanks about.
Yeah, it's worth some research, and the whole Negroponte thing, too, and whenever he raises his, there's so much blood to follow.
Right. When Negroponte shows up, he looks like the model for the death's head, the Nazi SS death's head anyway. I've never seen anyone who looked more like a cadaver, a walking, breathing cadaver. He's drenched in blood of in Central America, in pick a region of the world. He and Kissinger, the blood twins, I've never seen in any other two who were so violent and so willing to have tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people murdered in order to further whatever the goals of corporatist America happen to be in any given moment. It's really vile. Tim, I have to leave you there. Your call is breaking up severely again. We've had this happen a couple times tonight, but I appreciate your insight. Thanks for checking in. Yeah, I've got to spend a little more time looking up the Muslim Brotherhood. Why are they not on the terrorist watch organization? Maybe there's no more room. The list is all full of social activist organizations and unions, and I'm talking about in this country. Thousands of people in Jordan have taken to the streets in protest, demanding the country's prime minister step down and the government curb rising prices, inflation, and unemployment. Today was the third consecutive Friday of protests. It seems that people really pour into the streets after services on Fridays. Oh, my goodness. Weird stuff. Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, hey, I was going to call in for trivia, but that's okay. I wanted to make a comment about Egypt.
Yeah?
It is a libertarian dream. I mean, these people love the atmosphere.
Hey, Tom, let me put you on hold for a second. We got to take a break. I wasn't watching the clock. Stay right there. I'll come back to you after the break.
seekers gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malone.
The hour. Talking to Tom in Bullhead City, Arizona. Okay, where were we?
Yeah, the Egyptian thing is a libertarian dream. So let us take advantage of this situation, right? Let us take advantage procure this. You know, they want this. Anarchy in the streets. They just love it, okay? Government can't handle problems, you know? People, you know what I'm saying, right? This is where they're coming from, and so let's manipulate this little thing, make a little ploy, you know. You're following me here?
No, I don't think I am, Tom. How is it a libertarian plot? I would
not a plot, a dream.
A dream. How is it?
Because they love the anarchy in the streets. Ron Paul libertarians want us out of foreign affairs. Okay?
Uh-huh.
All right? So why not just say, okay, you're right. Okay, give in to them. Just like right now, it's really a secular fight, from what I'm understanding. It's a secular fight. But yet, they've got the brothers of the Muslim whatever world, you know, joining in the fight now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're gathering, or you know, you follow me? And then so, you know, does the ends justify the means? I mean, okay, all right.
Well, it depends on what you're talking about, and I have to admit, Tom, I'm not completely following what you're saying here. That's probably my fault, not yours. But anyway, thanks for checking in. As far as as far as who wins when Egypt's leadership finally capitulates, when the kingdoms of Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Kuwait finally collapse, when the dictatorship in Syria that was passed from father to son collapses, when these events occur, who directly benefits? The hope is that the people who live under these regimes would benefit, but I wonder if that's possible. In so many of these oppressive societies, the functioning state, the part of the state that functions the best, is the repressive part of it, either the military or the police, the torturers, the security apparatus. The civil service apparatus of so many of these countries is subordinate to the security state. What am I trying to say? Come on, Mike, wake up. The security state. So as these regimes fall, as they surely will, if nothing else, gravity eventually gets them. Just like gravity eventually will destroy the top 0.1% of the gangster capitalists in this country. Your money eventually weighs you down to the point where you collapse. You fall all the way down from the penthouse into the street, and then the people fall upon you and eat you. They devour you and pass around pieces of you. But what's going to happen in these countries where the only... or not the only, but the most well-functioning part of the state is the security apparatus. That's the problem. If the people in Egypt succeed. Now, Egypt is a little bit different. It is, Cleopatra, right? Been around for a long time. It has quite a civil service infrastructure. But what about the other countries, and including Egypt? If there is no leadership to step into the vacuum created by these falling regimes, what happens then? The military steps in, the mullahs step in, the Islamists, the religious crazy people, just like we have religious crazy people here, there are religious crazy people in Israel, religious crazy people throughout the Muslim countries. So what happens then? That's the big if to me. The if is not whether or not these regimes are going to fall. Of course they are. Of course they are. They have to fall. They must fall. Egypt has 86 million people being controlled by one megalomaniac son of a bitch at the top who is supported by the United States, supported by various European countries. I mean, after all, he has the Suez Canal. Who wants to see that be chock-a-block with sabotage ships? Been there, done that. Remember, 56? I think it was 56. You remember that? You don't remember that? Look it up. Suez Crisis, 1956. So, Back to the Future. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Play trivia? I thought we were going to do that after this break. Well, I guess not. Nobody wants to do it. Okay, back to your phone calls. Tim from L.A. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for letting me have you on the air.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you for reading my letter, too.
The one about...
Boeing, yeah.
About Boeing.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I'm calling is because, you know, I've been talking to a lot of friends about them, and a lot of them, and all of them are geeks. And, you know, they knew about this quite a long time ago, and currently they're writing programs to prevent this from happening here in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And what they do is they write programs, like, again, to counter this, and they put it on, like, for, I guess, Apple, Windows, Firefox, or Linux,
mm-hmm.
so that, you know, if the U.S. this administration or any administration decides to, you know, hack into your computer or try to do something to get information from you, that programs like, you know, browsers like Firefox would block it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because these people, my friends, these geeks, are too scared of fight. They don't like guns. They're scared of guns.
Mm-hmm.
But their real weapon is in their basement. You know, people say, oh, yeah, they're in the basement, and, you know, their mother's basement, their parents' basement, and everything. But to be honest with you, they're the true warriors. They're the, I guess you could say, the 2.0 version of the 60s Chicago 7, in a sense.
Well, I think any kind of effective warfare, by effective... And I'm getting crazy here, but any effective to me where it concerns warfare is like the neutron bomb, something that disables your enemy but doesn't destroy the infrastructure. Not that I advocate any of that. I'm talking from the crazy people's perspective now.
Right.
But what that is going to be, that weapon has to be, is the Internet.
Right.
And all the way, everything is wired now. Everything is wired. There's probably not a manufacturing facility, a nuclear facility, infrastructure facility, an education facility. I mean, go right down the list on Earth that is not wired, that is not hooked to the web, to the net, somehow, some way. So how easy is it to use destructive worm programs, just like Stuxnet was, to get in and absolutely destroy something. And what's left? Well, none of the buildings have been burned up. Nothing has collapsed. Well, maybe if it's a nuclear facility that gets hit, that's something different. But people are still alive. Well, okay, maybe not. Maybe, again, going for that nuclear reactor results in a meltdown. But for the most part, the destruction caused by internet warfare or e-warfare, whatever you want to call it, is going to be a little bit different from using drone aircraft and tanks and bombs and mortars and atomic weapons and so on and so forth. These are very strange times, Tim.
And you know, I have also have friends who are with Operation Payback. I'm not gonna say, or whatever. And, you know, they support you. They respect you. They do listen to you. And, you know, again, you know, they were once victims of bullies and whatever.
Right. Well,
but
payback is a bitch, right?
Yeah, but they're not going to go out and murder like, you know, like the Bush Bryant family did.
Right.
No. And they said they love you a lot. They love you a lot. They think you're great. And they said, thank you very much for, you know, promoting, well, not promoting, but, like, talking about them.
Yeah, sure. One thing about being a cyber warrior, nobody, if you do it right, nobody knows about you.
Yeah. Well, I'm not one, though.
Right. All right. Well, Tim, I got to move on. Thanks, pal.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. I appreciate it. Take care. If anybody wants to do some trivia before this night is over, call in right now, 877-996-2556. Mike is in Westminster, South Carolina. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you again. I haven't talked to you in a long time.
My pleasure.
Yeah, mine too. We used to talk, quite a bit back in the day, but I've pretty much given up hope on a lot of this stuff here, especially in this country. And I know, you know, you understand where I'm coming from about this because you've seen it happening too. But listening to your last caller and the talking about Boeing and stuff, you know, they're all deep into the, you know, the information data mining and all that stuff, you know. Another one that you need to watch really, really closely is Lockheed Martin.
Oh my God! Yes,
you read that article over there on the.
I read it.
Common Dreams.
I pretty much read it on the air. Those bastards are they're into everything, Mike.
Well, I said I wouldn't be surprised if they had a finger in this pie too. But you know, back to what I was saying about the loss of hope, basically, about this country and what's happening in it. This move towards getting rid of all the net neutrality, this is kind of like the first step in them getting control of and being able to separate the business communications from the individuals communicating with each other, because that's really important. They can't shut down the interstate in the United States because all these day traders be jumping out of the windows on Wall Street. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Really.
I do know.
You'd have to install some kind of an awning out there. But you know, when you actually, you know, move into this area of net neutrality and you make it to where you can have fast lanes for business and these other things, and then you have the slow lanes for, you know, those of us who want to actually communicate and, you know, do something productive in society. You have the ability at any time to shut off the slow lane, let the fast lane go. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And
that's just one more way.
And that's the whole idea. You know, it never occurred to me till tonight that's exactly what the plan is. That's why all this talk about slow lane and fast lane, that has nothing to do with e-commerce or with the money-making aspect of the web, and everything to do with controlling
the content.
And
exactly right.
And stopping people from using it as the most sophisticated and instant organizing tool in the history of the human race.
Exactly right. So. And you know, one of the things that I told you I kind of lost hope about this. I mean, after the Citizens United decision, and there's no pushback on that, and now they're talking about some kind of amend the Constitution. You know, how ridiculous an idea is that, and how long will it take to do something like that? And we've lost all of the media. We have no media, you know, as evidenced by the on-air dismissal of Keith Olbermann and things like this. You come to understand that we actually have no media at all left to have any kind of a message from the left coming out in this country.
Oh yeah.
You know, they own all the new merger with Comcast and NBC and all the rest of it. you know, it just pretty much stomps us out, except for a little bit of area we've got left on the internet, and they're working on that.
Yeah.
And they're hard at work on that.
It gets pretty discouraging, doesn't it, Mike?
Well, yeah, but here's something I thought about that, and you know, for some reason I don't know why this happened, but somehow, either through my use or my wife's use of the computer, somehow we visited a page or something that actually got them started sending us the you know, the right wing publications. And
yeah.
And you know, of course, I'm spending all my time now trying to get unsubscribed from all these things. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
But I happened to get one from a place called GOPUSA.com. Are you familiar with that?
I am not.
No.
No.
Well, it's a real heavy right wing site, and they have articles. It's kind of like, it's almost like a Truth Out or a Common Dreams of the right wing,
mm-hmm.
where they have news articles, you know, from these ridiculous people like Michelle Malkin and all these other, you know, that's what I'm saying, you know, but they have these articles that are written by them.
Well,
okay.
If you're gonna read that stuff, be careful.
No, I'm not reading. You know, the articles are, of course, I can read them and they don't affect me because I'm you know, totally immune to that stuff anyway.
Well, yeah, but remember what, who was it that said, oh, damn, I'm drawing a blank, when you stare into the abyss, eventually the abyss stares into you.
Back into you, that's exactly right.
And that can get scary.
But here's the important thing about what I'm telling you.
All right.
I did read a few of these articles just to see what they were saying, okay, and it's typical right-wing garbage. But the important thing is not the articles themselves, but the comments by the people who read the articles.
Right, right.
And that's the real meat of it when you get down in and you look at these things. And I only looked at a few of them, but I could tell by looking at the comments from some of these people that were making comments on there. They're definitely right-wing, but they don't understand why they're right-wing.
Yeah,
because
right.
they're complaining about things like Obama hiring a guy from GE. GE, they're saying, you know.
I mean,
they understand that something's wrong with corporate America, okay? But they don't really understand the big picture.
No, they don't. And that's a shame because, you know, somebody told me the other day, somebody who whose political persuasion would be more towards mine, not quite as far left as I am. But they said the sad part is that so many people in the Tea Bag organization or the Tea Party organization who are where they are without realizing why they're there and, in fact, would make natural allies for certain parts of left political philosophy in this country if they would just wake up. And I think that's what you're saying. Mike, I got to leave it there, pal. Thanks. I appreciate it. Take care. We'll be back after the break. And, oh, we have somebody who wants to play trivia. Mary in Indiana. We're coming right back. Stay with us.
Crawling in the dirt, and for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirts? You will find the bigger piggies staring at the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play.
There's the podcast trivia music. It means it's time once again to play podcast trivia. If you win, you get a one-year subscription to Malloy Podcast Downloads, commercial-free, with a massive retail value of $59.60. All right, cut the music, Johnny, if you would. Mary is in Centerton. Is that right, Centerton, Indiana?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mr. Mike Malloy.
Are you ready to take...
All right. I am ready, and I want to say, as one of only a handful of dyed-in-the-wool Democrats in my community, I'm hoping for an easy question.
Okay, well, it just so happens that I have one that is very, very, very difficult. But
I'll do my best.
Okay, here we go. All right. According to the same publication that broke the story of Senator John Edwards' extramarital sexual affair, who is the latest married man caught in a nasty sex scandal? Is it A, Todd Palin, B, Bill Clinton, C, Hosni Mubarak, or D, Dick Cheney?
Oh, jeez. I have to guess, Mike. I'm sorry. Well, I'm gonna guess C.
Hosni Mubarak?
Yeah.
No, it's not him. But that's all right. We'll do it again, Mary. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. All right. Diane is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hello, Diane.
Hello.
Are you ready to do podcast trivia?
Do I get a different question?
No, you get that one.
Oh, no.
All right. Here we go. According to the same publication that broke the story of Senator John Edwards' extramarital sexual affair, who's the latest married man caught in a nasty sex scandal? Is it A, Todd Palin, B, Bill Clinton, C, Hosni Mubarak, or D, Dick Cheney?
It's gotta be Todd Palin.
Yes! All right.
I mean, who else, right?
Oh, my God. Now, of course, that's only according to the Inquirer, and we all know that the Inquirer is just a lying rag that never gets anything right except when it does, right?
That's right.
All right. Diane, thanks. You win. Hold on. Let me put you on hold, and Kathy will take the pertinent information from you. Whew. Hosni Mubarak? I don't know. Maybe he has. I have no idea. Vincent is in Santa Fe, listening on KTRC. Hey, Vincent.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Enjoying your show.
Thank you.
I was hoping for the question, but somebody else got it.
Yeah, Diane in Grand Rapids, Michigan got it. You knew the answer to that one, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. All right, what else you got on your mind?
I was just calling to thank you for what you do on the radio every night.
Well, I appreciate that.
Keep up the good work.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot, Vincent. I wish I had another trivia question, but thanks for checking in, pal. I appreciate it. By the way, the guy that you heard on who gave me information about Boeing and their nasty little computer program that they apparently have delivered to the Egyptians. That's Tim from L.A. He has a blog spot. You ought to check him out. Tim from Los Angeles. Tim from Los Angeles .blogspot.com. Tim from Los Angeles .blogspot.com. It's an interesting site. Now, also, somebody sent me the... who sent this to me? I don't know. I will get the name when I get to the story, which will be the first of the week. But it is about the Negroponte U.S. Chamber of Commerce Egyptian thing. It was at... is it Crooks and Liars, or was it, where was this? Think Progress, originally. Now it's on various other websites. But this is very, very interesting. We'll probably do it, Monday night on the program. So to the person who sent that to me, who was it? Was it Greg? Let me see. Yeah, there we go. It was... Greg in, Jim, I'm sorry, Jim in New York City. This has been a weird night. The equipment is, you know, screwed up as it always does. Thanks, Jim. And we'll get to that Monday night. In scanning through it, it is very interesting. Irish Dave apparently has got some information for me here, too. And as far as the abyss is concerned... It was Nietzsche. That's right. Thanks, John. I knew it was one of those guys, one of those German guys. Alvin wants to talk. Uh, me see if we can get Alvin here. Hello, Alvin.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good some news, buddy.
What?
Since I talked to you.
Oh, what? You got me? You got some news?
Well, I called. I was hoping to get one of those trivia questions.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe next Friday.
Okay, but one thing, you had a story where the story you read was claiming that the Bush was claiming 3 years ago that while supporting Barack, Mubarak, America was secretly supporting his rival.
Right. Well, groups, he didn't have any rival, but groups inside, dissident groups inside Egypt, yes.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
That would be Bush and Cheney doing that. I find that hard to believe that they
hasn't that been typical American foreign policy, whether it's Democrat or Republican, in power in this country? Alvin, we're out of time, man. I'm sorry, I got to leave it there. Thanks for checking in, though. The Democrats or the Republicans, neither party has an exclusive hold on that kind of duplicity and hypocrisy. That's American as apple pie. I'll see you Monday night. Take care. Keep it lit, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
Want to lower the cost?